womenvotefortrump.com. That there is a movement of women that are for Trump.
Did you bring it up on your phone? Or would you like to use it while we, you know, use it while we're talking?
And then I got some pointers. You know that email that Brett did with all the points, the 81 achievements? I took some points off of those.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Don't let me forget to get a picture of you two as well before we leave here. All right. Oh, I'm so glad we made it, ladies. Yes. We're here. You know what? You can put these on if you want to. And the deal with them is then you'll just know when you know, when you're on mic or if you're drifting off, you tend to sound like that, or if you're coming, you know, back like when it sounds good. And I want you guys to sound good. Yeah, that looks good.
Great.
That looks good too. Okay.
Testing. Do you hear me?
Pro, huh? Yeah, I was going to say.
Okay, would you introduce yourself, please? We'll start with you, Shirlene.
Sure. I'm Shirlene Dela Cruz Ostrov, and I'm the chairman of the Hawaii Republican Party.
Great. And Jennifer?
Hi, my name is Jennifer Anderson, and I am the secretary for the Republican Party here in Hawaii. I'm also secretary for the Oahu League of Republican Women. And I was on the campaign here in Hawaii for Team Trump Hawaii, vice co-chairman under the state director, Gigi Jones.
Oh, you were. Oh, yes. So you were. Okay, so let's start like a year ago. Did either of you go up for the inauguration?
We went together.
Yes.
Oh, you did.
Yes.
What was that like?
So I thought the inauguration was exciting and full of people who were excited about the direction of the country, but at the same time, contrasting with people who were not excited about that change.
Yes, for me, it was my first presidential inauguration. I was honored to be invited because not everyone gets invited, obviously, and being a young Republican, only in the party about 2 years, I got to go to the different events. We went to two balls. One was the Asia Pacific and one was the Freedom Ball. And the inauguration was something that I don't think I'll ever forget because you could see all the people just waiting outside for the inauguration in the cold, but with this joy and pride that, you know, patriotism that you don't really see every day. And it was a refreshing moment.
Oh, my gosh. You're so right. We just don't get that feeling, you know, very often. You know, what attracted you to that candidate and the cause there?
Well, it was very interesting. I was at the headquarters volunteering. I volunteered on several campaigns here in Hawaii.
What originally got you started with the Republican Party?
I actually just came as a volunteer. I wanted to know more about the party and their values. And I started just in data entry and helping out the executive director at the moment, which was Marcia. And she invited me to come and just listen to the Vice Trump-Pence meeting. They had a meeting, and she said, "Would you like to hear what they have to say?" And I said, "Okay." And I went, and I decided to say, you know, instead of just looking at the media, why don't I actually get involved and see what they actually are doing here in Hawaii? Because the media, really, for young people like me, it's hard to believe them all the time because you get so confused. And seeing volunteer one-on-one and things coming down from headquarters, you can have your own opinion and you can have your own voice. And that was very important for me to make my own decision.
And you two met there at the party headquarters.
That's right. At the time, you know, I'm born and raised here in Hawaii, but I was gone from the islands for 30 years. Oh. I served in the military, active duty, Air Force. And when I came back, it wasn't in my DNA to be politically involved. But I saw the state of affairs of our country and of our state, and I decided to get politically involved and actually ran for office. So Jennifer and I met at the headquarters, and Jennifer actually helped my campaign. And so we became good friends. We have shared values and a shared passion to make sure that Hawaii voters had a choice in their ticket. And then it translated to the national election with an exciting 2016 presidential race.
Wow. When did you move back to Hawaii then?
So I moved back in 2014. I was, again, active duty for 24 years. Before that, I had left to go to college on the mainland. So I've been gone for such a long time. I'm conservative by nature, as I thought the rest of Hawaii was. Our cultures are conservative.
Meaning what?
The cultures that make up the island are conservative. I'm Filipino. It's a conservative culture by nature, just conservative socially, conservative fiscally, small business owners. Same with the Japanese culture, Korean culture, Chinese culture. So when I left, I thought everybody was like me.
But this is a very liberal state, though.
So, but remember, I left 30 years ago. Uh-huh. So when I left 30 years ago, there was a much better balance in our state legislature. When I left 30 years ago, Pat Saiki was in office in Congress. Mm. When I left 30 years ago, it was a much more balanced conversation. Mm. So when I came back, you can imagine I was a little surprised. I think the cultures were absolutely the same, but the values have totally switched to a much more liberal agenda over 30 years.
More liberal than it was in 1976?
Yes. Well, in 1976, we had 19 back in when I left, there were 19 elected Republicans in the state legislature, and we had a Republican congresswoman. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We haven't had that Republican congresswoman since she left office. We have 5 Republican legislatures. Mm-hmm. So you can see over the course of 20 plus years, it has totally, totally transformed in Hawaii.
That's odd, yeah.
Don't you see? I mean, so you can see that the numbers.
I'm really, really trying to see this, Charlene, because it actually seems like Hawaii was more liberal before than they are now. We were the first ones with the Equal Rights Amendment and the abortion rights.
Well, I think more
universal health care. These are
liberal,
like classic
versus balanced, right? Mm. So now that at least there were conversations back in those days, the legislators could actually pull a bill from a committee. Mm. They had the power to do that, and we don't have any power now, and so. That's only the only thing I'm referencing is the number of people who we can influence. So now, for instance, we have the Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the White House, and we have nobody in Washington D.C. with any voice in the party that is in power. So our senators and our congresswomen are all in the party that is not in power. And so Hawaii doesn't have a seat at the table in the discussions that really matter today. You know, unfortunately, in this 24-hour news cycle and what we watch in the news.
Help me really get this. I think the quote was the largest audience ever to witness an inauguration. And yet photographs belie that. How do you look at a statement like that from him?
I would say that possibly he was talking about the people who actually viewed it in person and possibly viewed it on television. But it's hard for me because I was there. So obviously I'm going to be more positive to saying, yes, there should be a lot of people out there. But the problem is a lot of people are kind of closet supporters I saw during the campaign where they support, but they're not really out there saying that they support the president.
Oh, and is so, that true here in Hawaii very much, you think?
We saw some occasions in the campaign where people weren't too sure at the beginning. And once he won the presidency, you could see they totally said, oh, we were totally for the president since the beginning. But it wasn't like that. And so it's interesting here in Hawaii because we are very blue to see that. But we welcome everyone to the party. It does not matter if you were for him or not. If you're a Republican and you want to join us, we welcome you.
So from my point of view, you know, those kinds of statements, I'm looking at the substance of what he has accomplished. So whether it was the largest inauguration or not, I'm like, okay, now start working and tell me what you're going to do. So when I look at, I'm a military person, and we have ISIS almost defeated in 8 months. People don't talk about that. We have the highest, the Dow at record highs. companies coming back here in Hawaii. There are several companies that have, because of the tax cuts, have put more money back in the pockets of American families. So as a conservative woman, I look at those things. As a military woman, I look at that we are defeating ISIS. As a military woman and as a veteran of decades, I look at the investment in our national security. As a daughter of immigrants, I look at the immigration policy.
And you like it.
I like it. I like it a lot. I like the fact that there should be rules. Our laws should be respected. Okay. And my parents are immigrants. I go back to our home country a lot because they respected the rules. And we are a country of rules and laws that should be respected. That's all I'm saying is if we don't respect the laws that are in place today, then you know, what are we?
I don't know. How do you feel about some of the laws that are being changed? You know, like some environmental protection laws, some laws regarding...
So I am a conservationist. So I do believe in some of the... I believe in conservation versus some of the environmental laws, which are totally political. But I am a conservationist. So especially here in Hawaii and a lot of the conservation laws... and I can translate that nationally. So there are things that I don't agree with totally, but the immigration, the strong defense, the conservative, the way we are transforming the judiciary back to not to interpreting laws and not having activist judges legislating from the bench. And we have to go with, so I was very proud that he put a constitutionalist on the Supreme Court. I'm very glad to see that they're putting constitutionalists back into the judiciary. I was incredibly proud of the fact that here in Hawaii, he appointed Kenji Price, who is a constitutionalist, as our U.S. federal judge. We need that. We don't need judges legislating from the bench and having activist judges. Those are the things that I truly believe in as a conservative woman, as a mother raising children here, as a woman trying to raise my family here, as a small business owner and things like that. So,
yeah, there are activist decisions that come down regarding immigration, for example. And that, in fact, Republicans are kind of hoping for some activist decisions.
Well, what is coming down is let's not rule by this executive order. What the president said is, this immigration things that you're asking for, we're going to give you till March 5th for you to make the law, to whatever law that you want to make. But do your job and make a law. Right now, a lot of these things were by executive order. So what we're trying to do is put the responsibility of legislating back into the legislators.
How do you feel about compromise?
Oh, I am all about compromise. I grew up in Hawaii. I'm the middle child of nine. I am all about compromise.
I think student of diplomacy, compromise is very important. And now, mostly with our national security threats that we have, that a lot of people haven't even paid attention much in the media because everything is about concentrating on more of a drama or who said what, where we should really be focusing and uniting as a country to be ready for those threats and educating ourselves whether, you know, what are we doing? What is Congress doing? What is our, you know, DOD plan? Most of the people, if you ask them, what has changed? How many executive orders has the president done in this year? You'd be amazed. Most people don't know. But as soon as you talk about his personal life, everyone has something to say. And that's something that I think the media is mostly responsible for.
Well, I mean, he's quite a mad tweeter, though. I mean, come on. He really jumps into the fray there.
Yes.
And how do you feel when he about the atmosphere he kind of creates with those tweets?
Well, me personally, I don't have a Twitter account, but I do see the media that say about the Twitter account. And I think that it's his way of trying to go over the fake news and say what he wants directly. It might be a little bit to the point and raw in the way that he says things, but it's open to the people's interpretation. So it depends how you look at what he says. If you might take it well, or you might look at it always bad. I think Shirlene will have more to say about this Twitter.
Yeah, so that's a good question. You know, the Twitter, you know, there's two sides of me. I'm a I I've been an athlete my whole life, so I've had coaches saying things that, you know, that are a little harsh. And I've been in the military my entire adult life. So I have learned to look at substance over tone, right? So I still don't think that I sometimes wish that the president would allow the formal communications to flow. It has been effective in creating the discussion and the controversy. Not always good. And so I'm not saying that it's always good. In fact, sometimes I say, I wish the president would suspend the Twitter account for the week or something like that. Mm. But there are some things where I say it does create the discussion where the news has been unfair, where he has the means to go above that and say what he thinks. And so we at least know what he's thinking, good, bad, or indifferent. We exactly know what's on his mind.
I know. Is that a little frightening, though?
It's a little frightening. It's a little frightening. Like I said, I'm not all for that, to be honest. But I do think it has been effective in culling through a very biased media.
Mm-hmm. I get a little worried about phrases like defeating ISIS just because it's been applied to a whole lot of situations and never has really panned out. Here he is. He's in Davos now.
Yes.
And I don't think he's done much to make it an easy trip for himself, you know, in terms of his agenda.
Right. So, Jennifer is a student of diplomacy, so I'll let her answer. But for me, I actually... I agree with you. I agree that he's not making it easy for himself. But there are people who elected him who believe that he should put America first above all, and we'll say it, above the interests of other countries as a president of the United States.
Does he need to call them shitholes?
No, I don't believe that he needs to call them shitholes. Those are one things that I would say I would agree with him on, the fact that some of the special privileges given to countries that are not necessarily contributing to our nation in the terms of the education and all of those things, for them to be put in front of the line, that's no reason for them to be called shitholes. But I do agree in the substance. If you look at the whole substance of the conversation, what he was saying is people from these countries should not be given go to the front of the line. People who are, it should be a merit-based immigration system, and it should not include chain migration, right? So just because you're here, Uncle Joe doesn't have a right to come here just because you've earned the right to come here.
How did your family get here?
So my dad was born and raised in the Philippines, and he joined the U.S. Navy. So for 8 years, he served in the U.S. Navy as not a U.S. citizen. He earned his way to become a citizen. It was a law back then. It was right after the Korean War. And he served without citizenship. I was born when he became a citizen. So we're very proud of that fact. I carried on that tradition, served for 24 years, became a colonel in the Air Force.
Have any of your relatives come here to Hawaii in that sort of chain migration style that
yes,
is now being attacked?
No. We have some relatives here, but not in that same chain migration style. I'm actually the only one from my immediate family left here in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Everybody's in other places. But yeah, so I just think that there should be a look at that immigration policy.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
Yeah.
For me, the foreign policy that the new cabinet and Trump's administration has put forward, they're still brand new at this, and they've been trying really fast and quickly to get through many of the travels to talk to many of the Asia. They stopped over here in Hawaii. And although it's hard to see how Trump can't be as diplomatic as people would like, we do know when we voted for those who voted for Trump, that he was a candidate that didn't want to be politically correct. So how can we transfer that to how does that look diplomacy-wise? Well, he's very direct, and some people like that, and others don't, because unfortunately, we're living in a time where we don't have the economy that we used to have. So we used to be able to help everyone. We used to be able to burden more of the financial, expenditures on the U.S. But now we can't, and we have to be selective in that. And there will be people that won't like us for that. But also it's good that he's encouraging other countries to step up and help internationally, like the NATO and the European Union, because a lot of the things that we've been giving to them, they haven't been
reciprocated.
Yes. And for example, when Sandy struck and natural disasters, who's going to help the U.S. when we're in crisis? That is something that we have to be prepared for, whether it be a war or crisis or natural disaster. We need to be prepared for that. So I think Trump has to be a little bit aggressive in saying, okay, are you going to be my ally? When things get hard, what is your position going to be with us? Because really, right now with the cyber warfare, it's something that people are not paying attention to, but it's very critical.
Who do you think thinks the U.S. is going to be on their side when they have a problem?
I think Japan and most of the countries in Asia, not so much China and Russia as much, but I think most of Asia can see that we've already had a footing there. We already have bases and economic agreements and things like that, that if something happens, we will be there to support them and have been, you know, through diplomatic means, being able to talk. Like, for example, right now, the Olympics, right? North Korea missed a deadline for their Olympic candidate. Trump and the U.S. extended that so that they could participate in the Olympics, because it's not only a sport, it's a diplomatic way of representing your country, because you're representing the best that you can from your country. So now that North Korea's candidate for the Olympics is able to participate, it has affected their diplomatic relations and kind of toned down a little bit of the threats that have been going on if you follow the media.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you don't see, but it's a new way of diplomacy. It's kind of a smart power where you try to dialogue and talk with people and see a different way and not just resorting to war or to hard power.
Oh, where you undercut your Secretary of State by saying there's absolutely actually no sense in negotiating with that country?
Well, I think that there's a negotiation for everything. Like, for example, I think for nuclear substance, there's one thing. Uh-huh. But when you're talking about Olympics and trying to build a partnership of being equal, you don't want to also anger the country by saying, oh, you can't have your... because the citizens aren't at fault, right? They don't have a say in what happens with the president.
And that rhetoric was, if we're talking about North Korea, right, the rhetoric has been going on decades. My entire military career has been focused. I've been stationed in Korea.
Yeah.
And this is absolutely no different. The tone and the relation hasn't been different. The difference is that the United States is coming from a position of strength and absolute discussion that we will not negotiate on certain terms. So,
I guess it's kind of the level of the discussion that, like, Rocket Man and Fire and Fury.
I mean, so again, all of that is part of the theater, the political theater. And again, if we looked at this 25 years ago when I was first stationed in Korea, these discussions were exactly the same. It's just not as theatrical, and we didn't have access to them. Now, both countries, have created a political theater. The substance and the things behind it's scary. You know, right now, the entire Pacific is engaged in a war game starting tomorrow, and that's not a secret. Because we have been doing this my entire military career, preparing for this war. It is not something, and
it just seems like we're closer to that war now with this president.
Well, I think that this president certainly is exerting very strong claims, and none of us hope to ever get to that point where we have to use what we have trained for decades. But I think that I think that you're right. It is a bit terrifying for people who don't understand the entire spectrum. And so I definitely come from a place where I have a little bit more access. You know, you were saying things like, have we defeated ISIS? So I come from a place where I know all the intelligence and things, and I can say with confidence that the American people should feel safer. Now, with Korea, the consistent lobbying of missiles should not just be like, oh, what, you know, he's just throwing a tantrum. It is a provocative act of war, or at least a provocative, aggressive act towards the international community. So the fact that North Korea, if the U.S. military shot missiles at Korea, I think that would be totally unacceptable. But North Korea constantly shoots missiles towards Guam and gets closer and closer and closer. That should be cause for alarm. That should be cause for strong language. It has been done 25 times more than his father, than the administration before him in North Korea. It is something that is escalating in North Korea. So we can't compare, it seems closer. It does seem closer because he's now lobbing missiles towards the United States. It is something that is, we have to respond to.
With tweets?
Well, with strong diplomatic language and strong political language. Yes. So, yes, very, very strong language. I don't think with tweets. Like I said, I'm not a big fan of tweets all the time. But definitely with strong American-led leadership of the international community. We're not in this alone. We're not in this war game alone.
I just wonder how many people are willing to follow us at this point.
Well, we have the Pacific military community behind us because the entire Pacific is at risk. And the entire Pacific knows this. The presidents and leaders of the other nations know this, that they are at equal risk. So what normal Americans don't understand is that our allies here in the Pacific are very much behind us. And of course, they've been
united by fear, if nothing else.
Well, united by fear against a common enemy. Mm-hmm. And the common enemy is not the United States.
And we're not united, for example, in trade, for example. That's been dumped. Mm-hmm. You just wonder what types of goals are uniting any kind of international community. And, you know, if we talk about tone a little too, did you two notice a difference in tone? Colleges and universities have noted there's an uptick in hate language and more challenging in classrooms, you know, around racism and those kinds of things.
Yes, I've noticed that the media covers it a lot. And sad to say, the media, a lot of people watch TV. If you keep covering just the riots and the bad things that happened, pretty soon people think that that's what they should be paying attention to, and that's what they should be thinking about.
Do you find it easier? Do you think hate speech or, you know, white nationalism, let's say, is expanding? Is it easier to talk about? Is it becoming more of a mainstream thing?
I don't really follow that too much, not statistically anyways, but I would say that it's covered more. I don't know if it's statistically more, but it's obviously being covered more in the media. Now, before we had movements about police aggression and everything, now it's more about hate and speech and about anti-patriotism. That's something I do not like, that I see, for example, taking the knee. It doesn't matter if you're for or against the government. You should always respect the people that have given their lives for our nation. Being from a military family in the Navy, the least you could do is pay respect to, say, the Pledge of Allegiance at school, know your history about, you know, the essentials of American foundation, and be proud of it. And sure, you can disagree with the administration, but there is a way to do it respectfully, and doing it in a way that children around you, you know, because the people that come to these riots and do demonstrations are just showing the children of the newer generation that you don't have to respect anyone to show that you have a right. And that's not what we want to send a message to. At least I don't want, if I ever have children in the future, for them to think that irrespectful and hatred is the way that you show that you have your rights. That is not the way that it should be.
That's why it was so alarming when after Charlottesville, the president said that there were some very fine people in that melee.
So the president's statement right after Charlottesville was light in substance, and the entire Republican National Committee, of which I'm a member, there's only 168 members in the United States, 100% denounced Charlottesville, denounced that hate. And I don't know that the president, in his relatively new role, understood that the language, again, you know, this is the challenge, that the language he needed to use at that time. And so I really applaud that the White House reorganized to put people like General Kelly involved and to actually have professionals who are there to tell him how important language is. While a very, very successful businessman, diplomatic language and language to the American people, and you have to say the things that you mean. And so the Republican National Committee took a very strong, in an hour, 168 members took a very strong statement in the hour right after that to say that this, we denounce this. And I think that was a great learning moment, because right after that was a whole huge upheaval of his inner circle. It's someone who's never been in politics before and so needed to put the structure behind him in order to help him to be successful. Again, I'm not a big fan of random tweets and some of the language. And so I'm glad to see that there are people who are around him helping him to say what he needs to say. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, every president has a whole slew of speech writers, sure, and everything. So he gets the final product. This president tweets it before everybody gets a chance to do it. So maybe now it's a team effort, right? Now, maybe now it's a team effort, like, step away from the phone and let's.
Hey, Shirlene, we've just got a few more minutes. Yes. So let's bring it to Hawaii. Help
yes.
me, guys. You're on the ground. You're Republicans in Hawaii. Has it been easier for you to make your points? Have there been more Republicans coming out of the woodwork kind of now with this president, Dan?
So from my perspective, there has been a new brand of Republicans coming out. There are people who are more libertarian in nature, who are very fiscally conservative and maybe more socially liberal, who feel comfortable in this new Republican national leadership for some reason. So we just had an open house of our Republican Party this past weekend, half the people we've never seen before signing party cards. And these are people who are coming out of the woodwork, as you say. So we're excited that there is a new energy. You know, the Trump tax plan has, we've had many, many employers here not only give bonuses, but raise their wages because directly from the tax plan. And so people are feeling, will feel a little bit of relief in their pocketbook, which is always helpful here in Hawaii with the highest cost of living and the highest tax state in the nation. It is very good to have a little bit of relief for families. Being a mother, raising children, a wife, and getting ready to send children to college, every dollar counts for us. So I think that people are feeling the same thing. No matter what your stance on the issue, I think people are glad to see a little bit of tax relief. For sure.
Hmm. Do you ever get worried that it's going to be harder to pay? Where is this $1 trillion going to come from? Could it possibly come from government services that we may need in the case of emergencies? Or where do you figure that money is going to come from?
Yeah, the national tax relief?
Yeah, where is that money going to come from?
Well, we're not going to be able to pay for things. You know, there are things that we shouldn't be paying for, quite frankly, and that's for probably another show.
Yeah.
You know, our GET tax coupled with the other taxes means that we have about a 12.79% sales tax on everything. We're taxed when we're sick. If we want medicine, we're taxed. If we're hungry, because every food counts. Even our Girl Scout cookies are taxed. I mean, everything is taxed here in Hawaii.
I need
that
to look
is
at that.
The
I need to look
highest
at that.
Taxation in the entire nation. So a little bit of relief from those taxes is good. But you're right, there are unfunded liabilities like the rail and the government pensions that one day there's got to be a solution.
Well, the idea is that the defunding will pull the legs out from under social programs like Medicare and
I'm all for making sure that our Medicare and I'm all for making sure that people have access to the services that are afforded them mm-hmm. by our Constitution. Absolutely. And mm-hmm. again,
and you know that after 5 years, our tax relief for individuals will end, and the corporate tax relief, however, is permanent in
yes,
this tax bill.
Yes, yes, I do.
That's a good idea.
I do uh-huh. think it's a good idea. Yeah, I actually wrote an op-ed that kind of details why I think that it was just in last Sunday's paper and money. So.
Yeah, we'll have to take a look at that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
That editorial. But for you, Jennifer, you're in your age group. Do you go to UH?
I go to HPU.
You go to HPU?
I'm a graduate student.
Oh, a graduate student in?
Diplomacy and Military Studies, and I'm certifying in National Security and Strategic Studies.
Oh, that's cool.
Thank
and that's
you.
Probably a good place to be doing that, too, huh?
Yes, it's a really great time to be studying, but it's really ever-changing, constantly changing, updating. And with technology, you can look at Korea and Japan and kind of use the tools that you study to kind of formulate your own opinion on what's happening. But it's very interesting because I was never into politics to now be involved with the Republican Party, because diplomacy is only half of it. You have to understand politics because they're very interwoven.
Are you seeing more people of your generation attracted to Republican ideas? Is it easier to talk about them?
I don't see them attracted as much as they. I think they're not as informed. If you ask the the young people about the Republican Party, they don't know the foundation of the Republican Party. They don't know that they were for abolishing slavery, and they were for rights for desegregation, and they don't know these types of things. And so there's a bit of a stigma about the Republican Party that young people, so I always tell them, you know, you're more than welcome to come, see what we're about, and you decide whether you like it or not, because ultimately we're in the United States and we all have freedom. You can choose to be Republican, you can choose to be Democrat, you can choose to be, you build your own party, right? Because that's what we're here for. And for me, being a Republican has opened my eyes to seeing kind of that conversation between what it is to be a Democrat and what it is to be a Republican, because now that you know what being a Republican is, then you can say, okay, well, then why are the Democrats doing this?
Yeah.
And how come the Republicans are doing that? So it's very interesting for me. It's still a learning experience. I'm so fortunate to be under Shirlene with her executive cabinet, I could say, here
right.
in Hawaii.
And her access to, you know,
yes.
national and international input.
Yes, and I was actually so proud for Ronald McDaniel that was there when she was sworn in as chairwoman of the RNC, and I hope to one day go to another meeting, but it was that energy was very amazing there, and thank you for your time.
One last thing. So you are a Republican. What are Republicans like? What is
Republicans are, for me, as a young Republican, conservative. They're educated. They always ask questions whether, you know, limited government, interference, and responsibility. Where is the money being spent? Why is this happening? Not just going with the status quo of everyone saying, okay, if we're going to do this, let's do it. I say, no. Why are you rallying about this? Is it fair? And we can agree to disagree.
I'm getting notes here. We've got to leave. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Noe.
Thank you.
We appreciate you taking the time to understand our perspective, and we're always pleased to talk to you anytime.
Oh, you guys are so easy to talk to.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much. Thanks. Aloha.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha.